This case got in front of the SCOTUS. Now, I don't know how, because I was not following it from the get-go. So I don't know how or why a case involving nurses and doctors and ER techs and what have you in New Tenochtitlan, which if you're a new listener, that means New York, what that has to do with the U.S. Constitution and a controversy that has arisen between two states. Because you have a controversy, but it's arisen between the employees, the nurses, and whatnot, and the hospital chains. So what that has to do with anything that ought to should wind up in front of the SCOTUS is beyond me. So we begin from there. Now, I want to start with Neil Gorsuch. We only have one page of this, but it's enough. The case is Dr. A versus Hateful Huckle, Satan's Apostle of New Tenochtitlan. Roman Catholic Diocese, 592 U.S. at, and then blank, Gorsuch concurring. But as days give way to weeks and weeks to months, this court came to recognize that the Constitution is not to be put away in challenging times, and we stopped tolerating discrimination against religious exercises. So this was about a religious exemption that was applied. Applied for, and it was denied. Now, again, what that has to do with the U.S. Constitution is beyond me, because it doesn't. Now, New York's Constitution does have a clause. I mean, it does have a freedom of expression, freedom of the press, all that crap clause in it. And that's what it should have been decided on. But having said that, tolerating discrimination against religious exercises, and then he cites a case. Finally, churches and synagogues and mosques reopened on equal footing with secular institutions. By the by, the court has previously, or the lower courts have previously, sided with Chris Ferrara and the Thomas More Society of Michigan, and not one, not two, but three separate cases where the state was overruled and trying to stop masses, services at a Protestant church, and services at a Jewish tabernacle, because Ferrara represented all three of them. In one of the case, he represented Father Robinson of the SSPX in one of them, I believe. And Chris won all three of those cases. Those cases had been decided in the lower courts against the religious, or against the priests, against the rabbi, and against the pastor. Gorsuch, still it seems the old lessons are hard ones. 6 weeks ago, this court refused relief in a case involving Maine's healthcare workers. That was Mills. Today, the court repeats a mistake by turning away New York's doctors and nurses. We do all this even though the state's executive decree clearly interferes with the free exercise of religion and does so seemingly based on nothing more than fear and anger at those who harbor unpopular religious beliefs. We allow the state to insist on the dismissal of thousands of medical workers, the very same individuals New Tenochtitlan has depended on and praised for their service on the pandemic's front lines over the last 21 months. To add insult to injury, we allow the state to deny these individuals unemployment benefits too. One can only hope today's ruling will not be the final chapter in this grim story. Cases like this one may serve as cautionary tales for those that follow, but how many more reminders do we need that the Constitution is not to be obeyed or disobeyed as the circumstances of a particular crisis may suggest. So that's Gorsuch. It's part of Gorsuch's dissent. Now, I would ask a question to Gorsuch. Why did the SCOTUS? I understand the appeals process. But if you lost at the appeals, the state of New York appeals court, that would seemingly would have been the end of it. The Supreme Court was not put there to have jurisdiction and review over all cases for people that are pissed off because they lose at the state level. And this is part of the reason why we're in the predicament where we're in today. I'm going to charge you mean predicament. How about predicament? So I wanted to talk about this today, and I was going to do it anyway because I subscribe to the Epoch Times. Now I can actually ruffle newspapers. This is the December 1, December 7th print edition of the Epoch Times. If you're watching on Crusade Channel TV, and you all should be, get your upgrade today and start watching the Mike Church Show on your television screen right now. This is Dinesh D'Souza. Can I just ask a question? How did Dinesh D'Souza become a conservative? Where what are the credentials? who proclaimed Dinesh D'Souza this icon of traditionalism and conservatism? I can't think of the time when the guy is right. I remember watching the movie that he made about Trump. And I got about two-thirds of the way through, and I went, okay. I don't want to knock the guy. So I'm going to try to keep the potential sins of detraction to a minimum here. He's just wrong. So he authored this op-ed at the Epoch Times, The Fallacy of Originalism. Wait a minute, how does Barrett doing in the Axiom commercial? The Fallacy of Originalism. So then he tries to explain what the different modes of thinking on the U.S. Constitution are. He says that Kavanaugh is a textualist, meaning he reads the actual text and he goes, this is what I can divine out of the text. Some are originalist, meaning they seek the original intent. And how can one possibly know the original intent? And why would that original intent matter today? Now, this guy's a conservative. He even says in his opinion piece, does D'Souza, he even says, we can't read the Bible and expect to understand what was meant at the time it was written. Like hell we can't. So I'm reading this and I'm going, like, I wonder how many people are going to read this and go, like, yeah, we need to get rid of, we're not originalists now. So what are you? Well, I'm going to have to put my reading glasses on here because the text is very small to get to D'Souza's point and then to demolish it into 800 bazillion little pieces as it should be. I submit that these original intentions, even if available, would make virtually no difference. The meaning of the text is contained in the text itself. The appeal to originalism as some sort of lamp that illuminates a text is based on a confusion between the source of an authoritative text and the context of that text. This is a bunch of malarkey here. If the source differs from the content, if, for instance, the framers of the Second Amendment intended all kinds of qualifications to go with the Second Amendment, then why didn't they insert those qualifications into the amendment itself? Well, one of the reasons why is because they did not believe they were writing a rule book. They did not believe they were writing the Encyclopedia Constitutionis. These things at the time of ratification were pretty well known and understood. All they were doing was stating, you know, this is the irony of this. They stated these things in text specifically because they wanted to write them down so that they could be known without any confusion, without any opinion being asserted whatsoever by future generations. Now, to understand a little bit of this, and I'm going to try to go through this and get this done in this segment here so we can move on. To understand a little bit of this, there's a couple things you have to know. One of them is this. The English had what they called a living constitution. It was partially the product of the Glorious Revolution of, I think it's 1688. And instead of writing a constitution down, they basically had certain principles and precepts in English common law that they agreed ought to be carried forward. So the English had a constitution, but it was not written down. So it was an oral tradition only. There was all manner of disagreement and controversy over it, and the English probably regretted that they didn't write it down. This is what was driving little Jimmy Madison and some of the other framers of our Constitution, that you had to write it down because the English didn't and they screwed up. They should have written it down. So to understand this, then you got to put it in perspective again. They were trying to avoid what they thought were the mistakes that their English brethren, freshly separated brethren, had made in the past. So this was the reason why we need to write it down, have a written document. So text obviously mattered. And then not having a text and then having it become subjective in the future did matter. They didn't want subjectivity to creep in. They wanted objectivity, so they wrote it down. Which is why there are entire days worth of debates in the Federal Convention of 1787 over the placements of commas, what ought to be capitalized and not capitalized. I'm not kidding. Entire days on the structure of a sentence so that someone couldn't get the look at a sentence in the future and get it wrong. What they didn't count on was us becoming imbeciles and not able to read plain English. In any event, the idea here that the original intent doesn't matter is just complete and total shenanigans around bullpens. Okay? Bullpens. As a matter of fact, as I understand it from many people, including here Dr. Kevin Gutzman, Raoul Berger, some of the Forrest McDonald, some of the greater modern historians, what the lawgiver believes he is ratifying today, he or she is ratifying, is the intent and scope of the law. If you don't like it, well, then that's where you repeal things or change them in the future. It happens all the time. State legislatures do this endlessly, constantly. Taking a piece of state law and going like, yeah, that doesn't work anymore. We ought to get rid of that and write a new one. And they do.